Good morning. If you are visiting with us today, we're glad to have you as a guest. I was visiting a new church this morning myself. I call it the left side. We have a sick child at home today, so it's just me. So I thought, since it was simple, I'd move my little self over here. I sat down and then contemplated the danger of maybe having sat in someone's seat and not realizing it. So I took that danger in my hands and stayed anyway. Colita was very kind to me on her row, so it all worked out okay. But it's weird. I realize, having sat there, I don't think I have sat on the left side of an auditorium since I was in high school. Because that was where the youth group row was, where I grew up. But somewhere in adult life, I just migrated to the right in so many ways. And found myself over here, and everything looks weird from over there. I saw a new side of Hans, and it was all very different. But we're glad you're here, and hope you will find this to be a welcoming place, whether you're on the left or the right. Couple things to mention before we get rolling. Has already been mentioned this morning, the character workshop that's coming up. My friend Nathan Miller will be coming in to speak to us. He is the president of Character First, and so he knows a thing or two about character. They do character training in companies, and in churches, and for athletic teams, and all kinds of things, and he's going to come in and talk to us about character. And I mentioned the week that we first announced this, it's really interesting, because when he goes into a company, sometimes the folks that run that company will like to hear Bible things. For instance, they do a little work with Hobby Lobby, and Hobby Lobby, if you've ever been inside a Hobby Lobby, we've got one coming here, I've heard. My wife is very excited, I'm not. But anyway, they play Christian music in the store. It's a lot of biblically centered kind of stuff. They have another branch called Mardell that's all their Bible school things. But they do some character training there, and obviously the Bible is welcome. Other places they go, they don't realize that the training they're getting is basically biblically centered training, and they've just taken all the scriptures off of the sheets that they hand out. And it's all still the same ideas. So it's very Bible-based stuff that they do, and we're excited about having him here to do that. And he's excited about coming to visit the Northwest. His wife is a professional photographer, and she has never been out here and is very excited about getting out while the men are doing men things. She's going to go out and take pictures. So she's excited about coming too, and we will be glad to have them here with us. Also, I wanted to mention, because it did not make it into the bulletin or the announcements because of timing, Debbie Harris is a new grandmother this morning. Christopher and Katie, yeah, go ahead. Christopher and Katie have a new son, Killian Adam, correct? Killian Adam Harris, who was born, was it Friday? Friday evening. So they are very excited. So if you see Debbie smiling a little more than normal this morning, that's why. And also, if you may have noticed along the way, there's a new flat-screen monitor out there in the foyer that have announcements and birthdays, anniversaries, and things that run on it each week. Roy mounted that up there for us, drilled holes and put things up, and it all works great. But there is a picture of Killian Adam that is running through there that I stole from Katie's Facebook. So you can see what that new baby looks like, assuming Debbie won't show you on her phone or something anyway. But we're excited for them. This morning, as we get started, I want to make a little disclaimer. I have, along the way, always brought forth to you things that are original to me. Now, I guess they're original to Scripture, but the things that we talk about in here are things that I have come up with, I have put them together, and you've probably thought to yourself, well, obviously he's not borrowing that from anyone, because that's, who would write that? But anyway, it's always stuff that's my own. I'm not a big fan of using other people's stuff, and I don't like to get online and just search for, hey, what's a great sermon about faith, and let's do that. But these next few weeks are going to be a little different for several reasons, the main one of which is I don't like to reinvent the wheel when it's been done better than I would do it anyway. Mike Duffield introduced me and the elders to this book, I Am a Church Member. He showed it to us, I don't know, probably about a month ago now. And we've been reading through it and really enjoyed it, and we've had thoughts about how can we best get you the information that are in these little books. And we first started with the idea of we could buy everyone a copy. And then we thought to ourselves, who would actually read that book if we bought a copy? Now, it's short, and so if you're not much of a reader, you've got that going for you. It's very easy language, and so you've also got that going for you, and it's very practical if you like practical. But we're realistic enough to know that if we hand everybody a book, not everybody is going to read that book. And so I thought, why don't we just talk about those things in here? And so for the next 6 weeks, we're going to talk about the main points of this book, and they are all very biblically founded and tied to Scripture. This book is written by Tom Rainer, who is the president of Lifeway Resources and does a ton of research on churches. Now, when I say churches, when it's Tom Rainer, it's all kinds of churches. And so he sees kind of what's going on in culture with churches in general. But I think a lot of the truths that he has seen in churches, we have seen copied here in our own church and in other churches in our community. One of the main ones that brought him to writing this book is the idea that if you look to people who were born 1946 or before, why he picked that year, I'm not completely sure, but 1946 or before, 66% of those people are members of churches somewhere, some kind of church. If you look at millennials, which is the young folks nowadays, younger than me, I can say young folks finally now. If you look at millennials, 15%. Big difference there. And so Rainer and his friends started to think, what is it that's leading us here? And that's where I want to start this morning. I just want to read you a couple pages real quick, and then we will roll into our main thoughts. He starts this book with a story about two church members, Michael and Liam. Michael and Liam began meeting for Monday morning breakfast at 6 o'clock over 5 months ago. They originally thought it would be a one-time event. They met in a couples Bible study group in their church. For many different reasons, they hit it off and were becoming good friends. When Michael originally invited Liam to meet him for breakfast on a Monday morning several months ago, Liam readily agreed. I think we've all probably had experiences like that, where you hit it off with somebody at church, you start to have social events outside of church where you get together maybe for a meal or a cup of coffee or play some games at somebody's house, that kind of thing, and you realize you have a lot of common things together. These two men enjoy their time together so much that this one-time event became a weekly event. It's now rare for the two friends not to meet on Monday morning. Early in their friendships, the conversations focused on sports, family, and politics. They had a lot in common. Michael was 41, Liam was 39. They each had three kids. They were each college football fanatics. Each of their teams was in the same conference, but they were pretty fierce rivals as well. That never happens around here, does it? No one's thinking about tomorrow while we're talking, by the way, are you? Okay. The guys thoroughly enjoyed trash-talking the other's team, but in a friendly spirit. But on this particular Monday morning, the conversation turned serious. Michael and his wife had noticed some changes in the demeanor of Liam in their Bible study group. He no longer seemed interested in studying and discussing the Bible as he did at talking about their church. And his comments were often critical about the congregation where the two families both had their membership. I should probably mention, too, at this point in the story, this book is not coming out because of a problem that I'm aware of. We thought this was a neat book that talked about things that church members should do and what church members should be. It's not to address an issue of any kind. So if you're already thinking in your mind, where is this going? It's not. It's just going towards who we are to be. Still, Michael was caught off guard on that particular Monday morning. Liam loved the eggs in the little restaurant. It was his regular order, but this Monday, he had not touched them and just moved them around on his plate and sipped some coffee. Liam did not take long to get to the point. Michael, he said, Lana and I have decided to leave the church. Pause seemed to last minutes. Neither of the men seemed to know what they should say next. Michael took the initiative and spoke softly and deliberately. Do you want to tell me about it? He inquired. He honestly didn't know if Liam wanted to say any more. His friends seemed resolute. Nevertheless, Liam began to explain his feelings and his decision. Lana and I went to the church to learn deep truths about the Bible. But the preacher is just not feeding us. We're not getting anything out of his messages. Sitting in the service on Sunday morning is just a waste of our time. Maybe I should have said here, this is not to address any kind of issue. Michael didn't respond. He could tell Liam had more to say. There are several great people in the church. You and Karen are the best. There are a few more that are like you. He paused and his expression became more serious. But honestly, Michael, our church is full of hypocrites. Did you hear Jim at the kids' basketball game? He embarrassed me the way he was screaming at the refs. What kind of testimony is that for a Christian? And of course, everyone knows about Neil. He's supposedly the pillar of the church. And then we find out he's been cheating on his wife for over a year. What kind of church is filled with these kinds of people? Liam was angry but controlled as he continued to vent. Look, the preacher acts like he cares, but I'm not sure he does. I told him Lana's dad was in the hospital for surgery and he never visited. Michael knew that Lana's father was not a member of the church, and he lived 50 miles away, and he also knew the preacher had called him and prayed with him, but he knew that any rebuttal would not be appreciated at the moment. Michael held his tongue. Now it seemed that Liam's mild rant was winding down. Liam seemed exhausted, ready to bring the conversation to a close. He did, however, offer a few pointed comments and two questions. "Michael," Liam began softly, "I really like you and Karen and your kids. You're a class act." He paused briefly. "But you seem enthused about the church. You keep serving and contributing. Don't take me wrong, but I wonder at times if you are blind to all the problems in the church." Then Liam offered a closing that really spoke more than he realized. "We're just really two different types of church members," he said. "Why is that? Why do we have such different perspectives?" Now, we can blame this on culture, and we often do. We can blame it on godless politics, and we do that as well. We can blame it on churches, hypocritical members, bad preachers. Lots of Christians are doing that. But I'm proposing that we who are church members need to look in the mirror. Now, I have probably just described just about every church that's out there. I have probably just described a conversation that you have had yourself with someone along the way. And most likely, I have either described your thoughts or the thoughts of someone you know really well in those last few sentences. This is church today. This is the struggle that we have with people. We are messed up people when it comes down to it. And all of us are going to let each other down. I was telling the class this morning that I was teaching about going to my first seventh grade basketball game yesterday. And several times having to say to myself, "Self-control, Brian, self-control, Brian, self-control, Brian." And a couple times letting it get the best of me and then having to repeat to myself again, "Self-control, Brian, self-control." And thinking to myself, what am I showing to people? What do people see about church when they see me? And that's what we're going to look at this morning. If you want to open to 1 Corinthians 12. 1 Corinthians chapter 12. I don't have all the verses on the screen this morning. I should have warned you that ahead of time too, so you'll actually need to open if you want to follow along. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, beginning in verse 12. "The body is a unit. Though it is made up of many parts, and though all its parts are many, they form one body. So it is with Christ. For we were all baptized by one Spirit into one body, whether Jews or Greeks, slave or free, and we were all given the one Spirit to drink. Now the body is not made up of one part, but many. If the foot should say, 'Because I am not a hand, I do not belong to the body,' it would not for that reason cease to be a part of the body. And if the ear should say, 'Because I am not an eye, I do not belong to the body,' it would not for that reason cease to be part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the sense of hearing be? If the whole body were an ear, where would the sense of smell be? But in fact, God arranged the parts of the body, every one of them, just as he wanted them to be. If they were all one part, where would the body be? As it is, there are many parts but one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, 'I don't need you,' and the head cannot say to the feet, 'I don't need you.' On the contrary, those parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable, and the parts that we think are less honorable we treat with special honor, and the parts that are unpresentable are treated with special modesty, while our presentable parts need no special treatment. But God has combined the members of the body and has given greater honor to the parts that lacked it, so that there be no division in the body, but that its parts should have equal concern for each other. If one part suffers, every part suffers with it. If one part is honored, every part rejoices with it." I told the group on Wednesday night or Sunday night of last week that when I was a kid, my grandmother opened up the freezer, big chest freezer in our house one Thanksgiving, and a turkey, frozen turkey, that she was getting to thaw, fell off the top shelf of the freezer and landed on her foot. And she didn't say anything to anybody because that was what my grandmother did. And she walked around and limped for several days. And finally we asked, because we started to notice, what's wrong with your foot? What's going on? And she told us the story. And then we found out when we asked her to see it, their foot was beginning to turn colors from having not gone to get it checked out. And gangrene set in, which is not something that we talk about a whole lot anymore. But as a result of this whole crazy episode with the frozen turkey, my grandmother lost two toes. one of them being the big toe. I don't like my big toe. I don't wear sandals because I don't like my big toe, although I've learned in Oregon I can wear socks, so it's okay. But I don't wear sandals because I don't like my big toe, and it's not one of those body parts that I'm just excited about. But what I learned I was 8 or 9 at the time this happened, what I learned about my grandmother losing the big toe is the amount of effect the big toe has on your balance. I had no idea. I thought, you know, you just maybe limp around a little bit. I'm sure it's incredibly painful to go through and all that, but she had to relearn to walk. She seemed old then, but she was just in her 60s. She was not an incredibly old woman. She had to relearn to walk. And it took time to figure out how to balance without that big toe there. And every time I think of this as the feet and the hands and the head and all this come together in 1 Corinthians 12, I think of my grandmother and that toe. And how if you had asked her a month before all that happened, how important is your big toe, she would say to you, it's a toe. But if you asked her after, it made all the difference in the world. It's not an exciting part of the body, the big toe. I watched playoff football yesterday. I never played football in high school because I wanted to be the quarterback. And I was built in high school just like I am now, only shrink me by about 6 inches. 5'3", about the same weight I am today, not your average quarterback. I should have been on the line doing what linemen do, but that was not exciting enough, and so I never played football. I wonder how many of us have that thought of church. And I don't know that we would ever admit it, and I don't think we would think of it in that way, but a lot of our jobs in church, a lot of the responsibilities, the things we do, the talents we bring, just don't seem all that exciting, do they? They're just kind of regular things that people do that are not exciting, and sometimes no one even knows unless someone takes the time to point it out. There are decorations behind me. Thank goodness I did not put them there. Because if I had, they would not look like that. I would have no idea what I was doing. Cecilia does. She knows how that's supposed to look, and she makes that happen. Now, that may or may not be an exciting job, depending on how you look at it, but it's a needed one. There are banners down both walls. I caught Staley's putting them up. If I had hung them, they probably would have been on level, maybe not in the right order, maybe not all matching, but they take that on themselves to be a thing that they do here to make what we do better. Each of us brings something. And you may look at that something you bring and you think to yourself, this is just not important. It's not exciting. We go to breakfast one Thursday a month, a big group of us, and every time you can count on Roger pulling his iPad out and taking a picture of everyone, and that's going to end up on Facebook later. And everyone, because of that, remembers that day at breakfast and what it was like and who was there. And I'll be honest with you, Roger, I hate it. I hate it because I don't like having my picture taken. And every week I want to volunteer, let me take it so Roger can be in it. And yet at the same time, I understand that that is something that we need. Each person brings in something. And our biggest problem, I think, is a lot of us will sit here for a long time, whether it be on the left side or on the right side, and not know what that is. Or we do know what that is, and we just run and hide from it because we don't want it to be used. We don't want to bring that talent that we bring in and do something with it and let God use it. And so we find ourselves having these arguments amongst ourselves. Well, I'm a hand and not a head, and I'm a foot and not... What you see here in these descriptions that Paul uses as he's inspired by the Spirit is these are all body parts that do things. We are not called to be the appendix this morning. We are not called to be something that is just there and you wonder, what does that thing do anyway? And the only time that you even know it's there is when it gets inflamed and irritates you and you want to remove it. We don't want to be that church member. We don't want to be the one that just gets under the skin of everyone else. We want to be doing something that is worthwhile. And we see the hands have a purpose. The head has a purpose. The eyes have a purpose. Each of us this morning has a purpose of one kind or another. And so there are a few things we want to look at today. One, I will be a functioning church member. If we continue on in verse 27, it says, "Now you are the body of Christ and each of you is a part of it. And in the church, God has appointed, first of all, apostles, second, prophets, third, teachers, then workers of miracles, also those having gifts of healing, those able to help others, those with gifts of administration, those speaking in different kinds of tongues. Are all apostles, are all prophets, are all teachers, do all work miracles, do all have gifts of healing, do all speak in tongues, do all interpret, but eagerly desire the greater gifts? Now, our problem here immediately is, as we see this list, we start to do with it what it feels like we're seeing here, which is, it's like a hierarchy, okay? I have the greatest gift because I have the microphone. And I get to take 30 minutes of your time each week, and you either must listen or leave, or tune me out. And then the next gifts would probably be Hans. He's got control up here for a certain amount of time. Or we could interchange those because Hans can sing, and so there's more talent involved there than in talking. There's the gift of decorating. There's the gift of any number of things that we do. And we start to think this one is more important than that one. And again, think Big Toe for a minute. Big Toe is not all that exciting, but it is as important as any other piece of the body because of what it does. And so we will begin by trying to be functioning church members. Now, what does that mean? And if you're visiting this morning, you've probably already thought to yourself, why did I pick today? We want to be people who do something. And we will be here functioning church members. In the average church, I learned this being an involvement minister, there is the 80-20 rule. And the 80-20 rule means this. 80% of the work is done by 20% of the people. And that holds true in most places. You'll find that same 20% of the people everywhere doing everything, and we don't want to be that. Now, it's real easy for us just to take this into the realm of what we do here in the building and what we do here in programs, but it's bigger than that. It's who we are as people, and are we going to be functioning people for God? So first, I am a functioning church member. Second, membership means that we are all necessary parts of the whole. Now, the illustration that he uses here in the book is that of a country club membership. And country club membership brings with it a couple things. Perks, and maybe some status that comes along with that. Where I came from in Searcy, we were in a dry county, which might be just a foreign thing to most people. I didn't know it existed until I moved there. There was no liquor sold in the stores in Searcy. There were four places in town that you could get liquor, actually three. The Elks Club, the Country Club, and a third one that's slipping my mind right now. And the Country Club was where people would have this membership and they would throw big parties and you could go swim in the pool and play on the tennis courts and play on the golf course, and it all brought with it perks. You pay a membership fee and you get with it perks. And I'm here to tell you that there are a lot of church members out there in our world today who, when the basket comes by, they feel like they're putting the club dues in, and there should now be perks that come from that. And that is church membership. And I'm here to tell you, that is not what the Bible has to say about church membership. Church membership is something where we put in, not something where we're concerned about taking out. Not something where we're concerned about the things that we get from this, but it's more, what can I do? And so membership means that we are all necessary parts of the whole. However big the job, however small the job, however out front, however behind the scenes, we are all parts of the whole. Second, membership means we are different, but we still work together. If you had a church full of 125 or 150 of me sitting in all these pews, it would be a horrible place to be that one other guy. I would drive you crazy. We cannot be all the same. Have you ever run into that person that is just like you and you find yourself very irritated by them? And then your spouse says, they remind me a lot of you. And you don't know how to take that. We're not all designed to be the same. And if you have ever looked at yourself and thought, I'd just like to be more like, there's something to be said for bettering ourselves, but there's also something to be said for being reminded that God created you the way you are because that's who he wants you to be. Now, can you be a better version of you most of the time? Sure, and so can I. But does God expect Larry to be Norm? No. Does God expect Ruth to be Paula? No. God expects Ruth to be Ruth and Paula to be Paula and Larry to be Larry and Norm to be Norm. He expects me to be who he designed me to be. And so if that is behind the scenes, that is okay. That is up front. That is okay. But he decided us each to be different. Next, membership means we say and do, what we say and do is based on the biblical foundation of love. So we find ourselves in 1 Corinthians 12, we know where this leads, which is 1 Corinthians 13. Which, as I've said before, is the thing we read at weddings, and we cross-stitch, and we put on our walls. Do you know that that was never intended for that? Now, not to say that it's not a great thing to think of at weddings and put on our walls and all that stuff. The context of 1 Corinthians 13 is what it is to be a Christian. Not what it is to be a husband or wife, and I get it, I know all those things relate. But what it is to be a member of the church, which is patient, kind, does not envy, does not boast. And as you start to think about the church conflicts that we get into, and not just here, but everywhere, are they not those things? I'm impatient with my brother. I'm unkind to my brother. I envy my brother. I'm boasting with a sister. That is where our conflict comes from. And so as he talks about this biblical foundation of love, that's where it all begins for us. And if we have a love for the church, then just showing up is not enough anymore. If you have love for your family, just being present is not enough. Now, I will say that honestly, for a lot of families, being present's a good start, because we tend to all go our busy ways and do our different things. But being present is just the beginning. Then love leads us to do something more than that. Church membership is a functioning membership. It is something that we do. We're going to close with something a little different this morning. And I know we are not people of creeds and all those kinds of things, but I want you to think this through. And I'm not going to ask you to repeat after me or anything like that, but I want you to look at these words as we read them. And secondly, I do want to mention, we didn't buy everybody a copy of the book because we didn't think everybody would read it. But we did get about a dozen copies that are on the table back there. And if you might like to read it and see where we're going, you are more than welcome to do that. It's about 60 or 70 pages. Even if you're a slow reader like me, it won't take you very long. But it will be worth your while, I think. And if it's something that you would like to hold on to for a while and ponder on, you're welcome to. Or if you'd like to share it with somebody, you're welcome to. I'm a church member. It's not a membership as in a civic organization or a country club. It's the kind of membership given to us in 1 Corinthians 12. Because I'm a member of the body of Christ, I must be a functioning member. Whether I'm an eye, an ear, or a hand, as a functioning member, I will give, I will serve, I will minister, I will evangelize, I will study, I will seek to be a blessing to others. Now think about that for a minute before we leave it behind. I will give. I realized this morning, sitting on the wrong side of the auditorium, that my wife is the keeper of the checkbook, which is how it usually goes, I think. And I don't have my one-man check that I usually keep in my wallet. And so I was scrambling for something to put in. I will give. Part of that is monetary. Part of that is what we do. I will serve. I will find things that I can do to make use of my talents, or maybe at times to stretch myself a little bit to better the family. I will do what I can do to help. And I'm telling you, you might need to rack your brain a little bit about what this is for you, but I guarantee you it is there. There is something you can do that no one else does in quite the same way. At Harding, we had social clubs that were kind of like fraternities and sororities and all that, but much less trouble. I was a beau for one of the girls' clubs, which means lots of girls send you mail, which was cool. They give you cookies and things, and it was just a really great thing. And in return, you show up for all of their stuff and their mural games that they play in and all of that. And the other thing that I learned very quickly was I was the beau that knew how to change a tire. And so there were five beaus, but if someone had a flat tire, I was the one that they called. And I had a semester where I probably changed 8 or 9 tires during that semester. And sometimes I felt kind of used. Sometimes I felt like it's good to be able to do this. Every time I showed them where the spare was and I showed them where the jack was, not because I was unwilling, but because I thought they should know and how to do it. But I changed all these tires. And I realized somewhere in the midst of all that, my grandfather showing me how to do this when I was a kid, it's now paid off. There's now a use for this. There's something that I can do with it. You have something like that. Something that seems mundane, something that seems unimportant, that you can do in a way that no one else can do. My mother lives by herself in the same house that we lived in when I was 5 years old. She has two clocks in her house that are out of reach and several light bulbs that are out of reach. And whenever I come to visit, I spend the first half hour adjusting the clocks for whatever hour it's gone forward or backward and changing light bulbs. And every time it feels very mundane and very kind of silly, but at the same time it's needed. I wish, and she might be listening to it this morning, and I don't mind her hearing this, I wish my mom was a part of a church family with some guy that knows how to change a light bulb and a clock. Because that person would gladly come to her house and do those things. And I guarantee you there is someone here thinking the same thing. I wish somebody would come to my house and just change my light bulbs or my clock or some help that I need. And you know how to do those things. You think that's insignificant or unimportant? Maybe to you in your house. But to that person sitting at the dark with the wrong time, it's a big deal. I will serve. I will minister. Wait, that's my job. You guys just call me and get me to do those things. No, and not that I mind, by the way, and I'll gladly go anywhere and pray with anybody and do all those things, but I don't know everyone that you know. I don't have the relationships that you have, and each of us is called to minister to others. I will evangelize. Now, we don't use that word a lot, but you know the story. You may not know every detail of the story. You might may not know be able to quote the entire story. You might not know the verse off the top of your head where it's found. But you know the story, and you are perfectly capable of telling that story. And do you want to know why I know? Because you're telling me your stories. I've heard about your grandkids and what they do. I've heard about trips across the country. I've heard about crazy things in Sri Lanka. I've heard about stuff going on at NCU. I've heard about stuff that happened back east. I've heard about all those things. And I know that you can tell stories, so let's tell the most important story, because your neighbors, your friends, your relatives deserve to hear it. I will evangelize. I will study. I collected baseball cards as a child, and as a result of that, I can tell you stats about the 1983 Atlanta Braves that you do not care about. I remember who hit, how many home runs, I remember batting averages, things I would love to just knock out of my head and replace with something important. How do I do that? I will study. And as much as I encourage you to read this book, I encourage you to read this one more. I will study. I will seek to be a blessing to others. Have you ever woken up in the morning and had that thought first? Or even second or third or 14th? I will seek today to be a blessing to someone, because you can. There is someone you will encounter today, tomorrow, the next day, that is having a rotten day. And you can be neutral in that, you can make it worse, or you can be a blessing. I will seek to be a blessing to others. I will seek to make this clicker work. Can you go ahead one, Laura? Thank you. I will remember that if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. If one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it. We suffer and we find honor and rejoicing together as family. When things are going wrong, we share in that. When things are going well, we share in that. I wasn't going to talk about this morning, but I thought it fit really well here, and Hans led the song. We sang Because He Lives, the song that they were not supposed to leave on. We sang Because He Lives. When we get to the second verse of that song, how sweet to hold a newborn baby, first thought that went through my head was Debbie. Second thought that went through my head was the time I heard this song that it changed it forever in my head. Music is a powerful thing. We had some good friends that had a baby, cute little baby, perfect little baby, and about a week into life, a few days into life, they realized that he had a genetic issue of some kind where he could not process nourishment. And they knew from that point there was nothing they could do and he would die. And a week into life, he was gone. And when I went to the funeral and there is nothing, I think, worse in the world than seeing a casket that is about this size sitting at the front of a church building. When I went to that funeral, I watched parents that I was so excited with 10 days ago. They were good friends. And I watched their lives just falling apart. And we sang that song. And when we got to the second verse about how sweet to sit to hold a newborn baby, I realized they're going to need a lot of help to get through this. This is incredibly hard. And the rejoicing times, they're a lot more fun. But the hard times are what make family, aren't they? We are trying this morning to be functioning church members, each and every one of us. And if you sit there this morning and you think, well, he's talking to that guy over there, or this lady over here, like I've said many times before, I need a mirror right at the back, because I'm talking to me and to you and to all of us. We need to be functioning church members. And that's what we'll be talking about for the next few weeks. I hope you will think to yourself, I will guarantee within this crowd, there are people who are doing this way better than I am, and there are people who are doing better than some of you are. There are people who could, like Rainer, write books about this kind of thing because they have lived this out in life. But all of us could probably improve in some way or another. All of us have times where we're really good at this and other times where we just kind of leave this behind. And I will hope that you will think this morning about what can I do to really be a functioning church member? What can I do to make this church different, to make it better? And let's be those people. This morning, if you have any needs, whether it be you would like to become a member of this church, and we have not sold you the flashy happy side this morning. It's a messed up group sometimes, just like any other church you're going to walk into the doors of. We have people that complain. We have people that are hypocritical. We have people that are great and wonderful and will encourage you at every turn. And honestly, there are some of us that just tend to move through all of those things. And sometimes we're complainers, and sometimes we're hypocritical, and sometimes we're just very excited for you and want to share in your joy. But I guarantee you that being a member of this mess is a better life. God intended for us to do these things together. And so this morning, if you would like to take on Christ in baptism and become a member of his church, we welcome that. Or if you just think to yourself, you know, there are things I could do better, there are things I can be, there are talents that God has given me that I've hidden for too long and I need to make use of those, whatever you might like to confess this morning or have us pray about, please come while we stand and sing.